Chapter 15. Ransom Casterfo had believed Leia when she told him Greer was coming along to Daxam 4 as backup, not as a sign of any mistrust. However, no one seemed to have informed Greer of this.
"Coming out of hyperspace in 5,
she said coolly, the first words she'd spoken since shortly after they'd left Hosnian Prime. Her thick black hair flowed free down her back, the only element of her body or personality that didn't seem to be under strict control.
"Strap in."
Greer had the helm of the vessel they'd rented for the journey, a small G-Con courier. After some deliberation, Ransom had chosen this ship because it was modern and stylish. He was traveling under his true identity, after all, and had to look the part. But also commonplace, unlikely to attract attention on its own. He had expected an experienced pilot like Greer to have some opinion on the matter, but he had the distinct sense that she wouldn't have cared whether he'd brought a two-person orbit hopper or a superstar destroyer.
"I suppose it's beneath you," he said.
That earned a swift sideways glance.
"What do you mean?"
Ransom gestured around the sleek black cockpit with his long-fingered hands, clearly referring to the whole ship.
"The G-Con. Too mundane for someone who used to be an elite racer."
"It's fine," she said shortly.
Another few moments of silence passed, during which Ransom gave up on any attempts at conversation. But then she added,
"I was hardly elite."
"Nonsense. Senator Organa shared your bona fides before this mission began, you know."
If Greer Sonnel assumed she was the only one Leia talked to, time she learned otherwise.
"Junior Sabres winner, a professional racer on the Crystal Cairn team for 2 years, until you retired suddenly 3 years ago. A short career, but an illustrious one, given the races you competed in. And you retired undefeated."
Greer contested none of this, but she stared at her panel with unshaking attention, even more than required when leaving hyperspace.
2 years doesn't make you elite.
Although Ransom didn't consider himself a vain man, he had learned during his hardscrabble childhood on Ryosa that he had to use every asset he had. That was the only way to get ahead. Weak people could not expect admiration or assistance, and so he would prove he was not weak. He bought the best clothes he could afford, made influential connections and let others know about them, and played up every skill he could honestly claim. So why would someone discount her own skills? Abandon her own fame? It made no sense to him. Weary of trying to get through to Greer, Ransom leaned back in his seat.
"As you like."
Her hand closed over the handle for the hyperdrive.
"Slipping out in 3, 2, 1, mark."
The courier shuddered as the stars froze in their proper places again. Beneath them lay Daxam 4, vivid among the blackness of space with its orange deserts and small teal-blue seas. Almost no cloud cover shielded the world or offered any promise of rain. Yet in this stark, largely uninhabited area of space, the rough terrain of Daxam 4 had to count as an oasis.
"Okay."
Greer punched a few controls, including the one to send an automatic signal requesting a berth at the capital city's spaceport.
"How are you going to play this?"
"You're actually interested now?"
Ransom could hear how priggish his voice sounded, and on one level he loathed himself for it. But by now he knew Greer Sonnel wouldn't respond to friendliness. She would have to be the one to initiate the thaw. His comment earned him an arched eyebrow, but she did at least swivel her seat to face his.
"I'm your backup. If I don't know where you're going or when, then I won't be much good at keeping you alive."
"But if you follow me, you're likely to scare off the types of people we're looking for."
Ransom reached into the pocket of his dark red cloak and pulled out his comm device to show her the messages he'd sent and received.
"Collectors of Imperial artifacts tend to have a jaded view of New Republic officials."
Greer took the comm device in her hand, staring down at the screen.
You're going to buy one of the helmets of the Emperor's personal guard?
Exactly. Which was actually very exciting. Ransom had already mentally selected a place of honor for it on his wall, assuming, of course, it was genuine. But beside the point. I'm already known in these circles and was able to arrange a potential transaction. A seller who goes by the name Crimson Blade.
What?
Greer frowned.
Is that his real name?
No. Ransom wanted to hedge. In the collecting scene, we often operate under names not our own. I go by my real identity, but others prefer more, colorful terms. Emperor's Wrath, Interceptor Fire, Avenger of Jakku. Ridiculous, the lot of them. Ransom knew this to be merely role-playing, the assumption of a part they might take on in reenactments, but he didn't trust an outsider to understand that. Fortunately, Greer showed no interest.
So you have no idea who this seller really is?
It hardly matters, because he turned out to have one of these helmets, a prize more than valuable enough to warrant a personal visit. He may well be tied to the groups we seek. If not, he should know some individuals who are. Once I've established a connection with him, I can build on that. Greer considered that in silence for a few moments before she handed back his device, pursing her lips as if to say, "Not bad."
"And I guess I'm your pilot?"
As though he needed one. "Let's pretend you're a member of my staff rather than Senator Organa's. If they check, we can make it seem as if I just hired you out from under Leia's nose a couple of weeks ago, and the napkin bombing kept records from being updated in a timely fashion." Greer nodded as their console began to blink with their approved landing time and coordinates.
"Smart."
"Was that a compliment?" "No, it couldn't have been. You spoke the words out loud without bursting into flames."
"Spare me," she said.
Was that the hint of a smile on her full lips? Surely, Ransom had imagined it. Daxum 4 somehow managed to look even more forbidding from the surface. The deep orange sands, stretching out for kilometers, made Ransom think of other desert worlds he had visited, where the sun beat down mercilessly. At the time, he'd loathed the heat, but he almost missed it now. Despite Daxum 4's two suns, the planet orbited at the very edge of its solar system, far enough that the chill ran deep even at twice noon. Ransom had felt somewhat ostentatious packing a fur cloak, but at the moment he couldn't have cared less whether anyone else found his clothing grandiose. He might have frozen stiff by now without it. Greer, of course, showed no sign of discomfort, even though she wore mere woolens. But Pomarthan robes were famous for their warmth, and she had layered beige and blue ones, belting them close and draping both hoods over her head. Together, they walked through the streets of the city. Correction, he thought. Through what passes for a city on this barren rock? Only a few streets formed the town center, each one lined with low, scrubby houses or shops. He found it difficult to tell one from the other, since most structures had been cast from the same mold. Square, squat cubes of adobe or stucco, with their whitewashed surfaces stained reddish by the sand.
"One question,"
Greer said.
"This guard's helmet is expensive, right?"
"Rather." As much as Ransom longed to add it to his collection, he could never have justified the expenditure were it not part of this mission.
"So whoever owns it has to have serious money."
Greer's gaze went up and down the desolate street.
"If I had serious money, I'd live somewhere else."
She had a good point. This crimson sword had wealth, and yet chose to remain on Daxum 4, a planet that had only one possible advantage Ransom could see. It was obscure, rarely visited, and therefore out of sight. Also, large sums of the money from Rin Riven Dai's cartel are being funneled onto this world. Hard to imagine what they're spending it on. Greer nodded.
"Not on the nightlife, that's for sure."
Were there spice warehouses here? vaults of valuable goods waiting to be sold for quick, laundered credits? If you hid such things on a world like this, you could be fairly certain they would stay hidden. Until now, he thought with some pride. His appointment was at a tea house, which proved to be a small, rundown establishment with poor lighting and cheap booths. Small lanterns hung from the ceiling, casting a dim, gold light that didn't penetrate the shadows. Ransom scanned the room and recognized his target at first sight. She would have stood out in any room. Perhaps 60 years of age, she had long, wiry hair that curled halfway down her back, black, streaked through with silver. Thin and angular, she gave the impression of someone who had been carved by time into her purest, simplest form, as if all softness had been stripped away. Small white scars marked areas of her forehead, left cheek, and throat. Her dark eyes were already focused on him, and she sat in a corner that allowed no one to approach her from behind. But none of this was the reason Ransom immediately knew her. This was the woman from the casino on Bastatha, the one who had not wanted to be noticed. Ransom glanced at Greer and nodded toward the counter across the room, where lone patrons could sit on low wooden stools and take their tea. Although he could tell Greer bridled at being so casually ordered around, she knew her obedience was necessary to their cover. As she walked off, he turned back to Crimson Sword. He knew better than to lie outright.
"Have we met before?" he said as he took his seat opposite her. "You look very familiar."
"I am Arlys Hadrosian, and no, we haven't met."
Her low, husky voice sounded like that of someone far older, or a spice fiend who had been at it too long. But Ransom suspected that rasp had more to do with the scars on her throat.
"However, we visited Bastatha at the same time, not so very long ago. I took note of the senatorial delegation."
"Careful," Ransom told himself. She had to know that he'd been investigating Rinriven Dai and would be on her guard. Yet Hadrosian had agreed to sell to him, even knowing his real identity, which meant she thought he might prove friend rather than foe. He would have to tread a very cautious path to decrease her suspicion and increase her hopes.
"When we were running errands for Ryloth," he said darkly, "hardly the proper business of a senator. But we flushed a few local mobsters out for the authorities, so I suppose it wasn't a total waste."
"You think little of mobsters, I take it?"
Hadrosian said this as if she did, too. Ransom decided to be completely honest in his answer, since he could think of no fib that would serve him better.
"Grubbing for credits? Making money off edicts? What kind of business is that? What kind of life?"
"I agree, Senator Costerfo. We are meant for better things."
Hadrosian's smile sliced across her face like a blade.
"A few rounds of sabacc in a casino may serve one night's purpose, but real rewards do not come from mere games of chance."
"Agreed."
"I set up this purchase to assess her. She could only have agreed to it in order to assess me in turn.
What is it she hopes to find?"
He nodded at the server who had approached the table, an actual human instead of a droid, evidence of this planet's poverty, and chose one of the teas from the cart at random. It proved to be fragrant and sweet, and the ceramic cup warmed his hands. Ransom was grateful, not least because it gave him a moment to collect his thoughts.
"So," he began, "how did you come about the helmet?"
He expected the usual sort of story. Collected from another collector, on and on, back to the usual foggy tales about a heroic friend or ancestor who had personally taken Imperial artifacts as trophies of war. But Hadrosian surprised him again.
"I served in the Imperial Starfleet, Senator Costerfo. So did many members of my family and many friends. The helmet belonged to my elder brother."
She cast her eyes down at her cup of tea, the first time her attention had been anything less than razor sharp.
He became seriously ill the day before Palpatine left for the second Death Star, and so lost his chance to accompany the Emperor on that final journey. Had he gone along? Who knows? Perhaps history would have been rewritten.
How precisely would a lone Imperial guard have thwarted the entire Rebel fleet? But people convince themselves of stranger things than this in order to believe they could have altered fate. Your brother agreed to part with the helmet? I should have thought he would treasure it forever.
He returned to regular service after Palpatine's death, and was one of those who fell at Jakku. This helmet is one of the few things I have left of him.
Then I'm even more surprised you're willing to sell such a keepsake, Ransom said.
I wouldn't have sold it to just anyone. You were exactly the sort of customer I hoped for.
Her eyes crinkled at the edges, hinting at the smile she suppressed. All this time, I thought I set up this sale. But this isn't my snare. It's hers. Normally, Ransom would have been chagrined to have strolled so easily into a trap. Instead, relief washed over him. Hadrasian would be less likely to suspect his agenda because she had orchestrated their meeting for purposes of her own. He asked himself how he would have acted if he really were here only as a buyer. Leaning across the table, he said, "Tell me, what did you do in the Imperial Starfleet?" Hadrasian smiled easily this time.
"You want to hear some war stories? Your interest in the Empire's history is well known, Senator Castelfo. But I doubt such an important man has the time."
"I'll make the time." The next 2 hours were filled with tales of the Imperial Starfleet, particularly Hadrasian's youthful duties as a TIE pilot. Later, she had become an ISB officer.
"More interesting," she confided, "but only in the moment, not in the retelling."
Ransom took note of that. Anyone admitted to the Empire's internal security force had been considered loyal to the core. But he kept the conversation focused on her days chasing down spice runners around Kessel and Cara Of Doi. He didn't have to pretend to be fascinated. Hadrasian's stories were amazing. They parted well, with an appointment the next day for the actual purchase of the helmet.
"Not here," Hadrasian said. "I'll send the coordinates for my territory in the Western Wastes. A quick hour's flight, no more. But please, ask your staffer,"
she nodded toward Greer, who remained in place at the counter,
"to remain behind. I prefer to keep my transactions confidential."
Was this the same sort of setup Leia had faced on Bastatha? Ransom doubted it. Hadrasian had taken this meeting to sound him out, and he felt sure he'd passed her test. Whatever trust he'd earned could only be spoiled by insisting on Greer's presence.
"Understandable," he said. "I look forward to it. Will you have more stories for me?"
Hadrasian inclined her head.
"Many more, Senator Castelfo."
Although he managed to hold on to his elation until he and Greer were well away from the tea house, once they were in the clear, Ransom recounted every detail of his conversation with Arlie's Hadrasian. Greer didn't seem to share his enthusiasm, but he kept going, talking the entire way back to the spaceport hangar.
"And still completely loyal to the Empire. As though she'd taken her oath yesterday, I swear."
"Must be nice for you," Greer said.
It took Ransom a moment to process that.
"Excuse me?"
"Meeting someone who shares so many of your interests. Like, say, worshipping the Empire."
He would have been less offended if she'd slapped him.
"I do not worship the Empire. Haven't you been listening? Don't you realize this means we're on the right track?"
"I realize we're getting closer to finding out what's happening on Daxam 4, Greer said. "But I'm still not sure which track you're on."
Ransom refused to dignify that with an answer. He stalked past her, determined to grab what he needed from the ship and head to the rooms he'd rented for the night. All his careful conversation, all his planning, and still he won only sneers.
Was nothing he did ever going to be good enough for Leia's self-righteous team?
That night, long after dark had fallen, Greer took the G-Con courier out for a spin.
I wonder if Casterfo will see it and think I'm ditching him, she thought.
By now, the man was almost certainly asleep. But she couldn't shake the idea, largely because she felt guilty. Snapping at the guy did no one any good. Princess Leia had chosen to trust Ransom Casterfo. That made it Greer's job to help him. He'd done some quick talking today and quicker thinking. If he hadn't, Hadrosian might have realized she wasn't playing them as smoothly as she'd hoped. Besides, he'd shown courage when he went to rescue Leia from Rin Riven Dai, and apparently he'd even visited the princess in the aftermath of the bombing. But Casterfo still rankled Greer on every level. The one thing she couldn't shake was something Princess Leia had said on Bastatha. Can't you just see him in an Imperial uniform? Pamarth's relationship with the Empire had been a complex one. In the earliest years of Palpatine's rule, its citizens had flocked to join the Imperial Starfleet as pilots and gunners, funneling their martial spirit into the Emperor's armies. No one at Pamarth had ever been able to understand the Republic's use of clone soldiers to replace citizen warriors, and they were eager for new battles, new conquests. But all that changed after the Death Star destroyed Alderaan. The idea of firing upon civilians and soldiers alike, from a distance, without taking the slightest personal risk in return. Every true warrior of Pamarth knew that to be the foulest kind of cowardice. Many deserted immediately, and within the year hundreds had joined the Rebel Alliance, including Greer's parents. She had grown up listening to their stories of battle against the Empire. Casterfo said he was no admirer of the Empire, but he acted like one. Surely that was what irritated her about him so.
Or maybe, she admitted to herself, you're just jealous of how carefree he can be. How optimistic. How he gets to lead a life with no limits, while you're...
Greer breathed out sharply in frustration as she banked the courier, soaring upward into the night. With every meter she rose from the ground, she felt freer. Daxam-4's near cloudless atmosphere meant a broad vista of stars stretching out before her, so that she could hardly tell whether she was in space or the sky. Gradually she relaxed, easing into a high flight that would trace a wide circle around the city. Low winds, light atmosphere. The flying was easy, and Greer's thoughts had begun to wander, when signals at the far western edge of her flight plan began to blink at the rim of her view screen. Frowning, she focused more tightly on them to get a good read. According to her records, she was well outside the main air traffic lanes, and Daxam-4 was so deserted she wouldn't have expected to see many craft at all.
Maybe they're cloud sowers, or standard sentries, she mused.
But these ships were too fast for any of that. They could only be starfighters, which meant she'd found the Amaxine warriors. Greer quickly damped down her own signals and swooped lower so she'd be harder to detect. Soon she skimmed only meters above the ground, dust swirling beneath the courier as she studied her readouts. 15, 22, no. Nearly 30 starfighters flew over the far western wastes and in military formation. She set her scanning range to maximum, and her eyes widened as she realized at least 5 other squadrons were practicing identical maneuvers. Few militias were so large. Even fewer flew with such precision. And almost none had a fleet of starfighters as fast and well-armed as those of the New Republic fleet. That settled it. The Amaxines were far more than a group of over-enthusiastic patrollers. They were a paramilitary organization, one with significant funds, ties to organized crime, a leader who would no doubt turn out to be someone close to Arlys Hadrosian, if not Hadrosian herself, and an appointment with Ransom Casterfo, first thing in the morning. Greer muttered,
We'd better hope he's on our side.